What are you doing up at this hour of the night?
What are you doing up at this hour of the night?
Prevention of crime. Every hour of the day and night.
Movie.
Break.
Is the team that protects your property and you.
Hi, Movie Breakers. Here we are live from the Venice Film Festival with another interview, this time with a director that most of you might not for his first feature, You Won't Be Alone. This was a horror picture, but now he's here already with his third picture. And this is a very realistic drama. I'm talking to Goran Sulevski. Hi, Goran.
Hello.
And the main actress of his new feature, Alina Sherban. Hi.
Hello.
So, at first, what struck me about this movie was what it has in common with your first picture and also your second is this very realistic, naturalistic style that you really believe it could almost be documentary style. How did you develop that?
It happened kind of naturally, to be honest. Even before I made my features, I made a lot of short films. I made 25. And a lot of the time when I was filming, I didn't really have a crew or even a cast of almost never a cast of professional actors. It was always real people, and I found I kind of had to create an almost documentary environment on set, like a 360-degree space where people would just interact in a normal, natural way, and would be constantly on alert, trying to capture moments with my, you know, camera teams on the various short films. And then it kind of just continued, because when I was putting together You Won't Be Alone, we were using a lot of my short films as a reference with my main team. You know, I didn't plan to make You Won't Be Alone that way. It happened naturally, and then I kind of embraced it. Whereas with Housekeeping for Beginners, that was always the plan from the beginning. From the very moment I came up with the idea, I wanted it to feel like a document of just ordinary day-to-day life for this particular kind of family in Skopje. It worked in a similar way. You know, with a lot of the sets, they were designed or, you know, decorated so that, you know, the actors could move anywhere, and it was all possible to shoot in every direction. The crew was very flexible and also moving around or like staying out of the way so that the actors had 360-degree space. Naum Doksevsky, our cinematographer, had pre-lit everything, again, designed in a way where actors could move, and he always knew how to angle himself so that he was capturing their performance but keeping them, you know, backlit so that we're not sacrificing the visual quality, because that's also very important to me. You know, I wanted it to feel like a very strong sensory experience as well as, you know, a very real experience. And I think it's impossible to underestimate how much sound does to make something feel real. And, you know, we would sometimes add layers in places to make it sound a little messier than when it was recorded. And that's a testament to Emma Bortignon, my sound designer on all of my three features, as well as the great sound team from Serbia that we had, who, you know, it's such a relief when you just know every word is being captured, every gesture. There were things I found when I was editing that I hadn't heard or noticed on the day, and I found them in the material, so I could build details into scenes, and I think, yeah, come up with, sort of build that documentary feel.
Now, the subject is very timely and very exciting, especially since it's something that we don't very often see on the screen. It's about a chosen family, or most of the family members are chosen. They're also biological family members, which are kids. So we have this lesbian couple, and one of them has kids, and the other woman, her partner, for like more than a decade, would like to adopt those kids after the mother dies of cancer, I believe. And this is not really possible, so she has to arrange some kind of fake marriage, pretend that she's in a straight relationship to be accepted as an appropriate mother, as an appropriate caretaker for those kids whom she knows, who are socialized with her. So while we all would think that's a natural choice to give to the partner, the kids would first think of the partner as the person that's best for adoption. That's not what's happening, and the chosen family has to go to a lot of struggles to try and really just keep together, to not be torn apart by the state system. How did you find that subject?
So to me, I feel like the main character, Dita, didn't really want children in her life. I think she fell in love with a woman who happened to have children. And then pretty much because the children are Roma, and knowing what that means in the socioeconomic and cultural context of Macedonia, and how little protection there is for, you know, available to them outside of her, self and her chosen family. That's why they're kind of in this situation, you know, where they have to find a way to adopt them. And, you know, I think initially when I first had the idea for the film, it was more about the atmosphere in this household. And I knew I wanted it to be multiple generations as well, because that I wanted to have a sense of home and sense of place. And I grew up in a very crowded household with multiple generations. And, you know, I wanted the household to resemble people I would kind of, I had in my everyday when I was growing up in Macedonia. You know, my school class had all kinds of kids that, frankly, I don't often see, you know, almost ever actually, definitely on Macedonian screens. So, you know, there were these things. And it's also, I should mention, a very organic process. I don't really start with ideas from a cerebral place. I start from an instinctive emotional place. It all comes out of me and then out of my head and onto, you know, my laptop. And then I do the pass, you know, for ideology or political context, more to just make sure it agrees, you know, with my ideals. But usually I kind of feel like I need to work on myself as a person, you know, to make sure my ideology is right, so I don't have to worry about it, you know, so because it all needs to come from an organic place if it's going to be good. And, you know, so that's kind of the subject matter came together. I think I've gone off on a tangent. Sorry, was there another part to the question I'm forgetting?
No, but it's still, you know, what's interesting. It's also interesting what you're telling. So this is, you know, what's a good story to tell. This is not about answering set questions. It's about you talking about the movie. Great. Yeah.
Wonderful. Yeah. No, not to...
Yeah, that just one political aspect that struck me about it is that, for example, in Italy now where we are, the law has been changed. So if a gay couple, no matter if they're women, if they're men, if they have biological children, and then they're not the spouse is supposed to be the other parent, but the heterosexual biological parent. So if you are a lesbian, you're living with another woman, you have a child. Not your partner is the other parent in the birth certificate, but the man who fathered the child, even if it's just a sperm donator or whatever, which is insane. And he has custody. So this is what's happening now in Italy. And
I found a doubt about that in the news just like 2 months ago, I think it was. And it was, you know, it's chilling. It's like, you know, I don't want to make metaphors to historical periods where this kind of thing happens.
Oh, I think the metaphors are around us. You know, we're sitting now in a metaphor, literally.
Like, you're, how do you not go? I mean, this is, it's such overt oppression and it's such horrific regression as well. And it's, you know, they're doing violence to children and they're doing violence to parents, obviously, in this case as well. And, you know, this is, you know, it's also somehow chilling because growing up, you know, as a naive boy in Macedonia, I would look to the West for what the future could be like. You know, somehow, you know, I'm a little too forgiving of, you know, living with oppression in Macedonia. But when you see this kind of thing happen in Italy and places like that, you just go, well, what hope is there? And that's why, and yeah, partly in making the film, you know, you want to make change happen, but also, like, right now there are queer families, and I feel like I want to document that in this moment, because who knows, they might disappear, you know? This is how disappearance starts. And it's just like, that is a motivating factor. But also, you know, and I think it's, to me, it's about like not even speaking to change happening. Just like, I just want to know we were here and we existed. And like, you know, this film can exist. They won't be able to delete it. It would be really hard to delete it. So, yeah.
And how do you find your actors, and how did you find Adina? Like, can you talk about, is there a casting process, or do you just find people from your surroundings?
It was a mix, actually. So with the first person I cast was Anna Maria, who is a friend of mine who I've worked with on a previous film. So she had the lead role. And the day we started talking about the script, she spoke about Alina, and we can talk about the experience of Alina, can say how they first met, because it's a really sweet story. And it kind of went from there. Like straight away when she spoke to me about Alina, I found a photo and then clips online, and there's an energy. Like, I don't really look for actors who necessarily match exactly what I wrote. I look for an energy, like a live wire energy and sort of naturalism and depth of feeling. When I find that, and I'm like, when a person feels really real to me, I go from that. With most of the cast, a lot of the main cast I either knew from their work or, you know, well, actually, yeah, from their work, where I'd worked with them before. And then with all of the supporting roles, the audition process wasn't standard. No one had to deliver lines. Like Samson, who plays Ali, and Mia, who plays Vanessa, and obviously our little Jale, who plays the little girl, their audition process was, they just, a casting agent was sent to Shuta, or Izari Shutka, as it's referred to in the film. She photographed as many people as possible, and they just spoke to camera for like 20 seconds about themselves. And I went from an instinctive place of who was, you know, who had fire in their eyes, essentially. And then I was like, I will adapt the character to suit the personality. But what was also wonderful is these actors not only shaped that and then kind of bent themselves to the role, but in the way the role and the character and the actor would meet, it would grow into something so much more real and tangible. I don't really like doing traditional auditions. So me and Melinda, our audition was like, well, if you like,
you didn't say anything so far. So yeah. Would you like to talk about your character, how you came into the movie, your experience?
I had this amazing chance to meet Ana Maria Marinka 16 years ago. When I was first starting acting, I was in my first term at the university, and I got this role in a BBC series out of really some photos, that's all. And I met Ana Maria when I didn't even know how to act, obviously. But she was really, with her, I did my debut, in a way, in filmmaking. And 16 years after, we meet again on a film, and what is funny is that I am dying in that one as well.
Oh my God. No, I've got a role in the next film for Alina. She's alive.
I know. Need to be alive.
Okay, more of that.
it was an honor to be Ana Maria's partner. It's really unbelievable to get this chance to have a team like we had to work with Goran, and really was as I said before, because it's on a very important topic for me as a Roma woman living in these times. I have to say, I grew up without being represented. I do not know what it's like to see yourself. I do not know what's like to hear about your history. I only know what it's like not to feel safe. So basically, just imagine growing up only hearing, if you don't behave, you're gonna be sent to the gypsies. Don't be a gypsy. All that. But you are a little girl and you are trying to make sense of the world. And then people are on the TV, they are making fun of what we are. And then you start to turn that hate into self-hate. So many, many years I was hiding my Roma ethnicity. And actually it's very interesting because I had to go on all this journey of self-hate to be the proud Roma I am today, to tell people about that. So I myself, whenever I am invited in a project that speaks about a Roma story or a Roma person, I need this collaboration with the writer, with the director, to make sure we're not causing harm. In all the projects I've been in, I had also the artistic freedom to speak my mind. I was not just an actress being directed. I said, this could be a bit dangerous, this could be dangerous, and Goran was making me feel safe. We both, obviously, but sometimes it's not obvious, obviously wanted not to cause harm and to make come closer to a human experience of somebody that happens to be Roma. So to be gay today is very hard. To be a woman is still very hard. But then let's add this hardship also to being Roma. It's the intersectionality of these experiences is something that we unfortunately do not know. And to be queer Roma and woman is like getting the both worlds crushing you, because it's also the misogyny, the discrimination from the Roma community as well, from the traditional side, let's say, that is unfortunately, I can say this as a Roma, is not open, so it's very hard also. And also from the non-Romas, from the society. So where is home? Where is safety? So it's so nice to, and I get the goosebumps to see on the big screen, real solidarity, allies, true family feeling that I am sure in the society exists. But we need to put that on a macro level, so that we shame the normality of racism today. Because unfortunately, racist towards Roma people is still normal today. It's not something shameful. And I could obviously mention Italy, where racism towards Roma people here, even in Venice, the picket, watch out for your pockets.
Yeah, it's everywhere. So it's in Germany, it's in
exactly,
France.
It's in Germany, it's in France, and it's in Europe, it's in Romania, it's in the Balkans, it's in the Macedonia. So I have to say that in its simplicity, this film brings light to a complex problem without pushing it to your eyes, but actually just showing that this is actually how life is. People have Roma friends, people have Roma teachers, people have Roma partners, but unfortunately, in cinema, in journalism, in the stories that I grew up with and that we see, we only focus on the bad or the stereotypes. So we're missing this whole human experience that we actually live outside of the cinemas. And if we give attention to that, we can shame, as I said, the normality of racism today. Mm. So for me, it's an honor, it's a privilege, I feel useful. Really, it's the utility of art. Mm. It's not art for art's sake, into showing ourselves, but it's art with that is a vehicle to get to people, and it's not staying here to show ourselves. So thank you, Goran, for this understanding, but it's not in an intellectual way, but human understanding of this complexities and making them without fear and without romanticizing or putting it out there.
It is an excellent opportunity to see other things reflected, and it's also very heartwarming for me, because what I always feel is that you, for example, never see underclass people, and this film shows underclass people, but it shows them in a realistic, authentic way that I can relate to. And in all movies, even like mainstream movies that you see that supposedly deal with underclass people, there are two options. Either the underclass people are cliches, they're paternalistic cliches, they're soppy cliches or negative cliches, or they're actually middle class people who are just supposed to be underclass, but they basically live on privileged middle class life and just always complain how poor they are.
Yeah.
And this is the representation that you get. So I think it's for many people, intersectional discriminated people, but also people from underclass, gay people, Roman people, like very heartwarming to see this film and finally see themselves reflected. And just last question, what is your next project? Can you say something about it, or do you have to find it?
No, I mean, it's still, I don't want to jinx it. It's still in financing stages. I do want to make something that's set across multiple countries, but it would be primarily filmed in Europe, almost entirely, I think. It's called True-ish. It's a kind of warm-hearted, you know, assault on fake news.
Again, very timely.
Yes, and I don't want to talk about it too much because, you know, it's just, until it's more of a reality, it feels a little bit uncomfortable. But there's, you know, roles in it for a few people I've worked with before, which is, you know, always something that, you know, excites me. There's Alina and Sara, who's in this film, and as well as you and me alone. And hopefully we bring a few new people to our ensemble. It's always nice. We'd love to film it next year. It's a complicated time. And if you're trying to do something bold, I mean, you know, I've been very lucky in the last year where I've suddenly, you know, after going through many difficult years, I've had a lot of opportunities thrown at me, but I want to tell the story I want to tell, you know, and I don't want to let go of that. So it's a really tricky time where I just want to focus on making sure I do these two films I really want to make next, and don't get distracted by how long it might take, whether they might happen at all, because there's a lot of easy options, but then I know I will be unhappy. Things that make me happier, I think, are these two films, so fingers crossed.
I keep my fingers crossed too. When they are coming out, the new movies, you're definitely going to read about them at Movie Break. Housekeeping for Beginners is now at the Venice Film Festival, and if it gets a release at home, of course, you're going to read about it with us. So stay tuned, and thank you for the interview, Goran and Alina.
Thank you. It's a beautiful conversation.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.